Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady. Live only on Netflix.
Ultimately, I'm going to keep saying it, get 1% better every day. Just get a little bit better every day.
Hey, welcome back. I'm Stephen Holder. I'm here with Zach Kiefer, and we are back for another episode of 1% Better, off-season edition. So it's quiet in Colts land, and that's okay. Yeah, we're going to take advantage of that. That's why you haven't heard from us quite as much. But there is no real offseason because something's always happening, sort of, at least in the background. So the Colts are a little quiet right now. Everybody else, not everybody, but a lot of other teams are wrapping up their offseasons. The Colts did that like over 2 weeks ago. So they are in parts unknown doing whatever it is they're doing. But while that's happening, Zach, I want to start by touching on a sort of an odd topic for us to have to talk about. But one of the things the Colts have been in the news for in the past, I guess, 24 hours even, is vaccination rates. We have, you know, look, people can make their own decisions. I'm not here to, you know, neither of us are here to get into the particulars of vaccination pros and cons and all that. That's a different conversation. But this is very relevant for the NFL. The NFL is trying to get teams to 85% vaccination rates, and that's a game changer if you get there. Now, here comes the news we saw yesterday from Mark Maskey at the Washington Post, who reports that the Colts, Jaguars, Cardinals, and Chargers are among the teams with the lowest vaccination rates in the league. I will couple with that. I had ironically asked a Colts source about how things were going with vaccinations before Mark reported that, and I got a very vague and unenthusiastic answer, and just said, you know, we're working through it. There's some apprehension, and hopefully it gets better. That's kind of what I was told. So I guess this is a very long setup, Zach, to say this is a real thing, right? This has real consequences potentially, and I'm not talking about health consequences, which is a whole other matter. But what do you make of this? And, you know, do you think there's still enough time that they can make up some ground here? And just how worried as a fan should people be?
I think it's hard to put your finger on why necessarily those three or four teams you mentioned would be on the low end or why the Colts are included in that group. But this is a real thing. You're right. And let's go back to November when they're playing the Titans at home and their best player on defense, DeForest Buckner, is gone on a Tuesday because he tests positive but doesn't have any symptoms, right? That was the situation with a lot of players last year. And you remember what happened that game. The Titans ran all over without DeForest Buckner. So, you know, that's a concern.
So also Autry as well, DeNico Autry.
Yeah. Right, and he was out too. And they were – I thought that defensive line wasn't the same. And we've seen in the last couple of weeks this happen. I mean, Chris Paul of the red-hot Phoenix Suns. And then John Rahm at the Memorial, he's got a 6-shot lead going into Sunday, and he's told on the 18th green, you're out of the tournament. So it's a very real thing with very real repercussions for these teams and their potential to be successful. To answer your last question, I do think there's time. And I think the more the players are educated, there's a better chance that they can, you know, get to that 85% threshold. But this is an individual choice for these players. But you got to think, like, if you lose it to DeForest Buckner, your defense isn't the same. There's, you know, they can preach next man up all they want, but there's no next man up for Darius Leonard. Nobody does what he does on the field. And I can give you 15 examples for this team right now, but, it was a real thing last year. And at this point, it feels like it could be a real thing this year.
Yeah. So the reporting that we've seen is that 50% of players league-wide, they've reached a 50% threshold where at least 50% of players have at least one dose of a vaccine. So that's progress. That's promising. The Colts, presumably, since they are said to be lacking or lagging, excuse me. I imagine they're lower. But, you know, look, we've got 6 weeks or so. Well,
that's a pretty long time. I mean, yeah, you know, it takes 2 weeks, I guess, to get, you know, a month. Yeah.
So, but they've got to make these decisions now because you don't want to be going into training camp having to still deal with that if you intend to get vaccinated. And I think that's, I mean, look, I felt pretty crappy after my second Moderna dose, right? So I can't imagine feeling that way in the middle of training camp. That would not be good for you.
My arm was sore for days. That would not be fun if I was trying to fight Quiddy Pay in the trenches or whatever.
right. So, and then to further clarify why we're talking about this, it's not just, well, there's the obvious, right, is what Zach laid out, right, that players could miss games. But there's also going to be the reality that there's some competitive disadvantage in another way too, right? If you have a team out there who are at a certain threshold, there's going to be different rules that apply to them versus teams that are not at that threshold. So, you know, you can imagine that if you're the coaching staff or in the front office with the Colts, you know that. And you know that, for example, it will impact how you can have meetings as a team. It will impact how you can congregate. It will impact, you know, how you lift weights, you know, how many guys can be in the weight room, all of those things. There's all these little guidelines that you don't see applied on Sundays. That's a different deal, right? There's all these things throughout the week, the preparation that's impacted as a result of where you are in terms of vaccinations. But I got to think, I want your thoughts on this. I think peer pressure will be a thing here. And I don't mean like guys pressuring others to do things. I mean, just guys, you know, getting peer pressure by just witnessing what they see others able to do. For example, I was talking to a team staffer who said that was one of the things that they're hoping for, is that guys start to see what the vaccinated players are able to do, and that may have some impact on them. For example, if you play on a Thursday night and now you've got a 4-day weekend, well, if you're vaccinated, guess what, buddy? You can go see your girlfriend, you know, four states away, or you can go.
What happened to Jonathan Taylor late last year? Exactly, right?
Yep.
That's a really good point.
Yeah, he did not contract COVID, but his girlfriend got exposed. And so he had to, she came home, and obviously he had to quarantine as a result of that. He never tested positive, but he missed I think he missed 3 days, 3 or 4 days because of that. So, this is a real thing. So, anyway, like I said, I think that may have some impact on guys. Like, it's not just that they can go and come. It's also it's the fact that if the testing continues, guys have to test on days off. And look, you and I went through this for a part of last year, right? That sucked.
Dude, okay? That's a really good point. So what do NFL players value? You know, besides the football part of it, is the freedom, right? During the season, their lives are so regimented, practice. Last year, these guys were testing almost every day at 7 a.m. I mean, they had to test every day. It was the first thing they did when they got to the facility. And if it continues the way it is, those who haven't been vaccinated will continue to test. And there will be the tier system, like you said. And it's a very real impact when it impacts who can be in the weight room, who can be in the meeting rooms together.
Yeah.
You think guys want to sit in a computer lab and do virtual meetings as opposed to being with their guys? That's a very real point. And believe me, the Thursday night thing is a very real point too, because when those guys get done with that, let's say they win on a Thursday night, Frank's going to give them a long weekend. They're going to want to go visit family or friends or enjoy a rare break in the middle of the season. If you're not vaccinated, you're going to have to be in Indianapolis and you're going to have to test Friday morning, Saturday morning, Sunday morning. So, you know, that's a real thing. And I think that's a really good point. There's a lot of sense in just getting the team to the highest possible vaccination rate they can, because it's going to give them the best chance to be together and to be the best football team.
Yeah, so I'll just sort of put a bow on it with this final thought, which is, you know, it's ironic to me at least that it's vaccines really are what are going to allow us to have a normal football season if that indeed happens. It's really the truth. You know what I mean? Like, we wouldn't be where we are as a country without vaccines. Whether you want to get one or not as an American, whatever, that's your choice. But you have to at least acknowledge, well, these vaccines, we'd be screwed, right? We would be in a whole different place. And you would not be hanging out at bars and doing whatever it is you're doing right now. You know,
it has been so nice to get out and not wear a mask and search, like at restaurants and go to the grocery. And it's just been, it's been huge.
Yeah. So it would be ironic if these players as a result who are benefiting and obviously, you know, want full crowds and all of these things, you know, if all these things that are made possible by vaccines and yet it's interesting that they, as a group, haven't completely embraced it. So that's, I don't know. That, I guess, like I said, that's interesting. You know, you can make up your own minds on what you think about it. So,
hey, it's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo Concert in Kansas City, go Kevin! Or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy?
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
All right. Let's change gears, Zach. So the Colts, as I said, it's been quiet. This is something we've touched on before, but I think it's worth revisiting because there's been some other developments in other places. So there's teams out there working right now, and I think some of them are taking a very different approach to the Colts. I'm seeing highlights of guys getting after it, you know, playing offense versus defense, helmets on, cornerbacks and wide receivers mixing it up. Colts did none of that. Okay. Yeah. What we watched was like completely foreign. I've seen some of these clips and I'm like, whoa, we didn't see any of this stuff. And I've been trying to kind of figure out like what does and doesn't matter. And I don't know the answer, and we probably won't know until we see what the Colts look like, but it's a big contrast. I mean, have you seen that? And I'm trying to figure out like, who's right and who's wrong? I don't know that we know, but it is kind of interesting to contrast what we've seen elsewhere and what we're seeing, or we did see, with the Colts. Have you seen that as well?
Yeah, and there's sort of two sides to it. I mean, you saw what happened with the 49ers a week or two ago. They had two starters go down with pretty serious injuries, and those guys aren't going to play this season. So that was, you know, part of the impetus behind Ryan Kelly and the players union saying, you know, we're not going to have a normal offseason. We're going to fight for some more time off. I get it from that point, but let me ask you this. Do you think if Frank Reich was speaking completely honestly, you know, we asked him after the OTAs, did you guys get some work done? He said, yeah. Do you think Frank Reich wishes his team was on the field this week? I think the answer would be yes, right?
No question. No question.
Yeah. I mean, they.
Yeah. I mean, I think we've had some conversations to that effect, and that was the impression I got for sure.
Yeah. And I guess I always break it down like this, like even the first 3 or 4 days of training camp, it's like, are they playing football or are they in shorts? And it's very, very different things. We've seen some players stand out in these situations, and then when they put the pads on, they fade, right? And vice versa. Mm-hmm. You don't get a real sense until they're playing football. But last year honestly changed my perception of this because they weren't on the field at all together until late July at the earliest, probably early August. And everything was so weird. I mean, you had Phillip Rivers coming into a new offense, and he was wearing a mask on the field, and he was thrown to T.Y. Hilton for the very first time. And it was just a crazy offseason, and they still went out there and won 11 games, right? So it can be done. But it's hard not to think objectively that other teams are getting a leg up right now on June 16th, and the Colts are, because they're playing something that's pretty close to real football, and the Colts are really scattered across the country doing their individual workouts.
Yeah, it's interesting. I think it boils down to – I think when you bring it down to the simplest level, I really feel what this is a question of, is the rest more valuable than getting the work in, right? And or not even rest, but I guess the better way to phrase it is preserving their bodies, right? And having healthy players is minimizing that risk greater than the benefits you get from doing the work, right? Whatever it is that your team's going to do. I don't know that answer, but that's the question. And I think
we probably won't get that answer until September, October, December, right, you know?
Right. Now, I will tell you, here's another variable that's going to come into play. I've heard that the coaches told the players to be ready when training camp gets here because it's going to be tough. And that's to be expected, I guess, when you think about it. They didn't do much this offseason, and the coaches are probably feeling like they've got to make up for lost time, not only in preparing their players, but really making sure they have the physical ability to endure the season. But there's a fine line with that too, right? You don't want to beat them into the ground, 2 weeks before the regular season starts. So this will be very interesting, and I think there's going to have to be a lot of careful steps taken by Frank Reich and his staff and Rusty and the performance staff as well, in terms of how they go about this. So it's going to be interesting. I will say, I agree with what you said about last year. They came out of the gate and they did what they had to do, and they were fine. I mean, I thought they executed at a pretty high level.
Except for that week one game, right?
Yeah, well, there's that.
But that's a yearly tradition around here.
Right. I mean, what, you expected the Colts to win week one?
You remember talking to Reich about that a couple weeks ago, and it's always going to be a point of emphasis from Jim Irsay. Got to win that week one game. Got to win that week one game. I said, Frank, I'm not even going to mention that you guys haven't won one since 2013. And he got a laugh out of that. So here we go again.
Yeah. I'm ready for our August interview with Jim Irsay, in which he says something to the effect of, week one's the most important game of the season. He can't help it. He wants to win an opener so bad. I think he just wants to say he's 1-0 for a change. I think that's all it is.
Right. That's true.
He wants to say it. He hasn't been able to say it for a while. So anyway, that opener against Seattle, that's going to be definitely a big game. So I don't know. We'll see. I don't know who's right and who's wrong, but I think that there is a lot of value in having healthy players in June. It's better having healthy players in like October, but maybe there's a relationship,
Yeah, and like, let's say they did have practices, and let's say they lost one guy. Let's say Marlon Mack comes back and hurts himself and he's done for the year. It's like then it almost wasn't worth it. If you you lose that one piece, or they got three guys coming off Achilles, so they wouldn't be out there. And I don't know. I can definitely see both sides. The players pushed really hard, to get this done before Memorial Day. And I know they're all working. They're working all over the country in different places. I know Carson Wentz stayed in Indianapolis to throw with some guys. And then they're going to meet again in June. They're going to meet again in July before camp starts. So believe me, they're not just, sitting on the couch. Some of them are playing golf. I do know that for a fact. But yeah, that's an interesting point you made, that a coach kind of let them know, like, look, July 26th comes around. Like, we got to go. We got to be ready to go because we didn't get everything done in the offseason that we normally would have. And look, they got preseason games this year as opposed to last year. So I'm excited. And I'll be honest, you've covered this team one more year than I have, but I think it's 7 or 8 for both of us. And this is probably the most excited I've been to cover a training camp in some time, because it's going to feel normal again, for one, in Westfield. I love Grand Park. It's such a great venue. If you haven't been up there, hopefully the fans are back in a full capacity this year. I think they will be. Two, you're going to watch Wentz. We're going to see what he looks like. He's going to be fun to watch. He's a big, strong quarterback. He can move. There's going to be some highlight plays. And three, I just think this roster's with a couple questions answered, I think they could be really good. But those are big questions. It's some of the biggest question marks on the field for any team, left tackle, pass rush, quarterback. But, you know, when I think about all the different questions we have to answer in camp, I think it's going to be really fun to get back to Westfield and watch football again.
Yeah, I think top to bottom, they got a really great roster. The question is, it is ironic that with such a great roster top to bottom, their questions are at some of the most critical spots. And that's what makes evaluating the Colts hard, you know? So speaking of which, in terms of evaluating them versus their peers, I don't think we've done an episode since the Julio Jones trade. And, you know, this has been evaluated and dissected, you know, forwards and backwards, but that's fine. I think, though, there's still a discussion here to be had in terms of whether this tilts the balance in this division. And this question has been posed to me quite often. And I'll tell you how I feel. I don't think it does. And if people care, I'll give you my rationale. So Julio Jones, let me start by saying Julio Jones is amazing. He's going to be a first ballot Hall of Famer. If he's not, I don't know why. He's the greatest receiver in his generation, I think. And so, right. So that guy, clearly you add that guy to your roster, that's a game changer. That is true. However, here's a couple things that are not being, I think, included in this conversation. And I think they're critical. Number one, Tennessee's defense is absolutely wretched. And they haven't done anything to improve it, first of all. So that's a problem. They're 29th in efficiency last season and 28th in yards allowed. So they're a bottom five defense, you know, by the numbers. Okay. Now, the other thing is, okay, Julio Jones, fantastic player. The other thing, though, that no one mentions is it's offset on some level by the losses of Corey Davis and Jonnu Smith. Those two guys, wide receiver and tight end, combined for 106 receptions last season. That's a lot. That's a lot. Is Julio Jones going to catch 106 balls? He might, but even if he does, how much is the net gain there? Not statistically, but just in terms of, you know, what sort of dangerous team they are. So I don't know. I think people have to look at this in context. So anyway, that's a mouthful, but I don't know. Did you have thoughts on whether this was like a game changer for the AFC South? I still think it's a two-team race.
No, I think it's definitely a two-team race, and I would give the edge to the Titans for a couple of reasons, and it's a really, really small edge. Number one being they're the defending champs, and I know that both teams finished 11-5. They both beat the crap out of the other team on the other team's home field last season. It was basically a wash, right? It was that weird tiebreaker scenario. But the Colts haven't won a division since 14, and I know that's a sticking point for Jim Irsay. I know it bothers Frank Reich. You know Chris Ballard wants to win that division. So, you know, until the Colts do it, I think the Titans have a slight edge. And then secondly, Julio is a game changer in a lot of ways. No, I don't think he replaces all that production. This guy hasn't had double digits in touchdowns since 2012. He only had three last year, six the year before. He does catch a lot of balls. He plays a lot of games. I mean, there's a lot of Julio doesn't play. He always gets hurt. I mean, he played 9 games last year, so he missed some games last year. But before that, 15 starts, 16 starts, 16 starts, 14 starts, 16 starts. So he's been available.
Yeah, I think that's been overblown completely.
Yeah. And also, like you said, I was at that Houston Super Bowl where the Falcons lost to the Patriots, and he made probably the greatest catch I've ever seen in person with that toe tap on the sideline in the fourth quarter. Unbelievable. That's the kind of talent they're getting. Now, he's 31, so he's not in his prime anymore. But Julio Jones against a guy like Rocky Sin has to be a scary thought for Colts fans. He's a guy you have to scheme against. And Ryan Tannehill is a very efficient quarterback. You know, I was doing the numbers yesterday for a story I'm working on for next week about, you know, what do they need from Carson Wentz? And, you know, Tannehill is sort of the blueprint. I mean, he was like fifth or sixth in QBR last year among the 14 playoff quarterbacks. I think that would surprise a lot of people. I think he was a couple spots ahead of Brady. But, you know, there's no doubt Julio is going to make Ryan Tannehill more efficient. And then you're forgetting the biggest factor of their entire offense, Derrick Henry, and really an MVP type running back. So I think for a couple of very small reasons, they have a very small edge. But like you said, the Titans defense doesn't scare me. It certainly doesn't scare the Colts the way they beat the crap out of them on that Thursday night game in Nashville last year. I think it's going to be fun. And I think these teams, I think it's very clear, right? Like, there's two big brothers in the division right now, and then there's the two little brothers. Houston's going nowhere right now. I don't know what the situation is with Deshaun Watson, but I don't know what team is around him. Jacksonville's probably going to take some time. It's Indianapolis and it's Tennessee. It's going to be a lot of fun this year. And I know the Colts, you know, they're going to say it from July 25th on. Our first goal is to win the division, because it's been a long time since they've done it.
Yeah, I mean, you got to have, you know, priorities, and that's got to be their first priority, no question about it. You know, you said something interesting there, and actually, it's funny because I wanted to touch on this. You know, you talked about Tannehill being maybe a blueprint for Carson Wentz, and it's funny. I was asked on the radio, in fact, just this morning, what I thought about ranking the AFC South quarterbacks, and it was actually thought provoking, and it got me thinking. You know, the whole how do I see Ryan Tannehill, right? And I think he's very efficient. There's no question about that.
I mean, but 33-7 last year. 33 touchdowns, yeah, to 7 picks.
Yeah. I still, though, it's still hard to see him as more than a product of a good system with good skill players and him really just fitting well within that. But that's okay, right?
Yeah. And you'll take that. And I think if you don't have, yeah, you know, the luck of finding an Aaron Rodgers or a Mahomes, right, or a Brady.
And that's what Carson Wentz could be. There's no question. I think that is, it's not necessarily the best case scenario. The best case scenario is he's just an absolute, you know, playmaker, and he you know, makes game changing plays.
Don't you think, but the upside that, with Wentz is higher?
I do.
Yeah, that's an important distinction. I think
the downsides are higher too.
Yeah, as we saw last range, year in Philadelphia.
Right. The range of possibilities is much bigger, right, with Carson Wentz. I think you get a more predictable outcome with Ryan Tannehill. And with Carson Wentz, it's kind of like, okay, it could be anything, right? But he definitely has, I think, a little bit better skill set. Definitely he's got the arm. He's probably a little better. Well, I don't know if he's a better athlete. Ryan Tannehill's a pretty good athlete. But he has the athleticism. He has the arm. And I think coupled together, there's a lot there. But he's got to put it together, and he's got to fine-tune a lot of that. So we'll see. But anyway, my like spur of the moment off the top of my head ranking for the quarterbacks in the division was Deshaun Watson with a huge asterisk. Like, I don't even know what the asterisk is for, but I don't know where he's going to be, right? Or if he's going to be on the field. I have no idea. I don't know
if he is, he's the best quarterback in the division, but there's so many, yeah, so many questions to answer before he is.
Right. And then I think I had to give the edge to Tannehill just in the short term. You know, because I think, is that recency bias? Maybe, but I think that's okay. I mean, what you have from their more recent performances, there's no question Tannehill gets that edge over Carson. There's no question. And then I went Carson Wentz just because he's done it before, and then Trevor Lawrence fourth. But I think, you know, Trevor Lawrence may have something to say about this before it's over with. So we'll see.
Right. And don't forget, the Titans had a big loss this offseason in Arthur Smith, you know, their offensive, mm-hmm, play caller, their offensive coordinator. And the Colts lost their offensive coordinator as well, Nick Sirianni, but he's not calling the plays. And that's a big deal, because they had,
yeah,
Arthur Smith did a really good job of balancing Tannehill's strengths with the monster at running back they have in Derrick Henry. And yeah, but they did lose some talent in Jonnu Smith and Corey Davis. And, you know, they do have a pretty dynamic 1-2 punch, though, with Brown and with Jones if he's healthy. But yeah, it's going to be fun. It's going to be a two-team race, and it's going to be fun. And like you said a couple weeks ago, I think it comes down to week 17 or week 18. I guess there is 18 weeks now, 17 games. It'll be a late December thing where we're figuring out who's going to win this division, I think, between those two teams.
Yeah, I mean, that's okay. That's fun. I mean, I think that's – in most divisions, that's the way it is. Very few teams are able to run away with their division. I mean, you see some divisions where you've got 2 and 3 teams in the final week, you know, with things still hanging in the balance. So this is the way it should be. And I don't think that there's any shame in having to go down to the wire with Tennessee, because they're a good team. And, you know, they've won the division now. Well, I was going to say the last couple of years. They won it last year. They've been in the thick of things
for several years now. This is just what it is. All right. This is their reality. The days of coasting to the AFC South title, they're over, right? I mean, they're over. I think in a couple of years, we could be looking at Jacksonville being a team that is on the come, to be completely right. honest, right? I mean, with they're following the Colts blueprint a little bit, which is to say they tried to maximize their high draft picks this year. You know, they had a ton of picks. They did a bigger version of what the Colts did in 2018. So they've like doubled down on the draft and like got all these young, exciting players. Those guys are going to grow up, okay? And some of them are going to pan out. Some of them won't, but some will. And I think this is going to be a division that's just going to remain competitive. That's okay. And then one day Houston will figure out what's going on.
Will they? We'll see. It doesn't seem like they're...
I'm giving them the benefit of the doubt. I don't know why. So anyway, that's what we got for today. Hey, by the way, we're doing something new. It's a new product from Apple. So if you're an iOS subscriber, check this out. It's a Apple bonus episode. What we'll do is we'll take some questions from readers and we'll address them on there. This is a separate subscription on Apple that you can do. And if you do subscribe to that, you actually unlock all of these bonus episodes from all of the Athletic podcasts. We've got a bunch of them. So it's a nice little extra if you're interested in it. So check it out on Apple. You'll also hear that if you're listening to this on, what's today? Wednesday. We'll do that here as well and release that today in addition to this episode. So check it out. We'll have the first one up for you today. Beyond that, that's it for this episode. I'm Stephen Holder with Zach Kiefer. We'll be back periodically. Won't be as common as when the season gets going, but we'll check in with you here from time to time, let you know what's going on with the Colts. And we're always available on The Athletic with new stories every day. All right, so that's it for me. And Zach, thanks for listening to 1% Better.
Hey, football fans, this is Diana Rossini from The Athletic. Get the top stories in pro football snapped directly to your inbox with our latest NFL newsletter, Scoop City. Jacob Robinson and I will bring you the daily scoop of top NFL articles, posts, and podcasts every Monday to Friday. Sign up for free now at theathletic.com/scoop.